Blog Talk Radio.
Eventually, we would have a housing shortage,
and that we would then be faced with having to decide, you know, where to live and prices of rent going up and things like that. And so, you know, here we are. We're, you know, we're where we talked about, and so we just have to figure out how to, you know, how to deal with that and you know, just kind of get through and, you know that it'll settle down. It always does, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, it does, you know, kind of lead to that. So, you know, it'll continue. My guess is this will continue for some time as Continue our area feels the impact of employment. You know, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, you know, all these guys that are hovering, look at these numbers, there are about 60-plus thousand, you know, employers. You know, that's a big number. And so that causes a little bit of a pressure on housing. So we'll continue to see that median prices are continuing to rise. Single family prices up at $434,000. There is active listing single family homes of July 13th year over year with 5,070. This year is 4,500. So definitely less than that. Which is our large county here where we're broadcasting the show from. Closed sales, you know, July 12th, it was 2,100, 2,640 as of recent. So you can just see the numbers just continue to just balloon year over year for the price of all the listing sales. And most new home builders are out of inventory. They have very little inventory, and they're trying to develop lots so that they can get more inventory on the market. But, you know, it's good news. It's a good problem to have. We're always going to have something to complain about, whether it's, you know, housing shortage or whatever we're going to have to deal with. So that's just, you know, that's just part of the course, and we have to deal with that. So other big news coming in that, speaking of our Northwest area, is Steve Ballmer, CEO for Microsoft, announced a week or so ago that he is planning on giving up the chair and retiring. This is an article out of U.S. News. Steve Ballmer, 13 years at the top of Microsoft, began as a new Century Dawn, but he leads the world's biggest software company in a crossword it must choose between decades of old desktop market technology or 21st century world of mobiles and tablets, right? In the memo, in his abrupt announcement on Friday, subsequent interviews and the timing wasn't his choice. This is an emotional, difficult thing to do, he told staff, asked if it was a sudden decision. In a later interview with CNET, he said, "For me, yeah, I thought about it for a long time, but the timing came more close to me on the course of the last few months." And so, you know, Obama's been under pressure since May. When ValueAct bought into the company and saying it was undervalued, Obama himself was part of the problem. So, so there's an economic issue going on internally, and, you know, the powers that be have just decided that, you know, they want to, you know, make a change. So there you go. Let's see, what else is going on? Evicted campers. There's a tent place that's been set up in Seattle named Nicholsville, which was by a former mayor of Seattle, Craig Nichols. And moving out days is the busy time for residents to pick up and pack out three new sites of housing families with children, homeless veterans, students, elderly men, and single women, as well as dogs, cats, goats, and chickens. Smell of the thing is campfires lingered in the air from all corners of Nicholsville came in the screech of crowbars and hammers, floor-by-board timber tenting, camping at West Martin, away south, just coming down. I mean, literally, people have set up homes here, permanent camping. It's under complaints of flooding, rat infestation, calls for police enforcement to camp, and a $1.65 million claim against the city by a neighbor business owner who says the encampment hurt its property value. The city decided to evict the campers who have illegally squatted on the site for over 2 years. The city first tried relocating them by giving union documents $500,000. The other can't move into other housing, but as fast as they move out, others move in. So it just becomes wait till the council holding on September 1st deadline to have the site cleared. But even so, a family from Idaho moved in just a day before. So, you know, on the one hand, what a terrible situation to have people living in that kind of situation. That cannot be the most healthiest of situations to live. And this is not about regentrification or anything like that, but, you know, housing is still a problem. So we're seeing that with the economy, I think many people are still struggling more than we hear about and know about. And so I think we need to continue to be mindful of the fact that, you know, this thing's got a long way to go. And they found Make a Little Start in 2008. Welcome Place over 2 years in West Martin, where it's grown from a collection of tents that includes little shacks, lean to for goats and chickens, a lot of porta potties, cooking area, and sleeping area, and has elected representatives. So they've just set up at that place over a prolonged period of time. So again, that's just, you know, unfortunate, you know, kind of thing going on. And so kind of sad. Yeah, kind of tough news to you know. Let's see, other news. Man accused of renting out foreclosed homes gets 2 years in jail. So the man accused of stealing from banks, homeowners, and loan processing center by illegally taking over homes and heading to prison. Peter Dance was sentenced prior to 2 years in prison for renting out homes that he did not own, but his victims still haven't been paid back. The defendant rented out homes to tenants, took their money, but did not own the house, said Prosecutor General Atchison. Atchison said Dance filed paperwork to muddy up the titles. He said this is a crime that went on for a period of years. It happened over and over again. Problems on the first encounter, Dance, 2010, with some of the victims came forward to expose the crimes. Dance previously guilty to 10 crimes in exchange for a 2 year prison sentence. Reality situation, hit Dance hard in court. But victim Tashani Hill said that isn't enough. Automation of the viciousness and continuous determination to anything and everything like that. She spoke in the sentence about how Dan took her for $20,000. It saddens me to encounter someone with a little bit more support than people with their soul from. I happen to know Tashani, and so that's even more personal of a story than I realized. The only thing I can say is that all my husband feels like is trying to help people. Really? Dance did apologize, but remained defiant about why he did what he did. It was not a scheme. It was something I dreamed of going and picking houses and doing things like that. The change around the roots, Dance Morse can only come to the side of prison cell. Dance wouldn't take $10,000 restitution. But missed the deadline by a week and a half. The judge gave leniency on that Friday hearing. So, yeah, I got no sympathy for that. If you're taking property that you don't own, and that's not good. So, got no sympathy for a guy. You know, as bad as it is, you know, people are dealing with foreclosures and problems. In fact, in our next segment, we've got Magnum Lockwood coming up, and we'll be talking about that. But yeah, I got no sympathy for a guy that goes out and takes, you know, $20,000 from people that are struggling to find housing and so forth. And so, to me, that just, you know, that makes that not acceptable. So, hey, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I've got the Magnum team warming up in the green room, and we'll be coming at them live here a little shortly. We'll put that to break. Hey, we're broadcasting live at Donner Norris Gallery in Bellevue, Washington. You listen to Head of the House. We'll be right back after this.
Every school year, millions of children go without education in Malawi, Africa, and only 20% of children get a secondary education. Help us raise a hand in Malawi, Africa through the Adopt a Student campaign. For just $2 a day, you can provide a Malawi child a secondary education. Your help is needed to reduce illiteracy in Malawi, Africa. For details, go to colorofsuccess.webs.com or call 425-610-9708.
Coral Bar and Kitchen in downtown Bellevue offers an environment of accessibility and a casual ease for families or the business professional. The venue features a diversity of food selections from the culinary styles of regional American cuisine. In the bar, you will find stylish and fun specialty drinks, local Washington wine features, and daily half-price happy hour specials. Stop by Coral today at 900 Bellevue Way, located in the Hyatt Regency, or call 425-623-1125, or go to coralbellevue.com.
Thank you for joining us on this Labor Day, sunny from the Northwest World Broadcast. I'm sure, of course, at the Donna Nordstrom Gallery here in downtown Bellevue. We enjoy the sights and sounds of summer shopping and all of the other kind of fun that goes with, toward the end of our summer. Probably got a good month left before things, you know, that change. Anyway, it is the first of the month, and we always have our insightful legal team join us, Magnum Law Group's in the house, to help bring some insight to, again, as always, like to say, the backside of this housing story, which is, you know, individuals that may be listening to us now that are dealing with foreclosures and so forth. And so I don't think it can be talked about enough, and we're always excited to hear what the next part of the equation might be so that we can help those that are, you know, still needing help out there to deal with that kind of stuff. So let's see. Hey, welcome. Since I got up, Deborah?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing great, Lewis. How are you doing?
I am good, and I survived my birthday weekend, and so it's all fun.
Happy birthday. I just had one of those. I don't like to do them anymore.
Yeah, it's it gets a little painful.
It gets a little too close to reality.
Yeah, I know. I know. I stop. People keep asking age, and I stop telling. I keep avoiding that question today. So.
Yeah. So what's going on today?
Well, we're you know, kicking off September right, and glad to have you guys on board. And you know, I just read an interesting story. I don't know if you caught that off air, but the guy, you know, went to jail renting out foreclosed homes.
Wow.
And I happen to know one of the victims, if you will, lost over $20,000. I'm not sure how that's even possible, that he could rent out houses that he didn't own.
Is he a real estate agent?
It did not say. Did not indicate that he was.
Interesting. I wonder how he pulled that one off.
Yeah, it's rather interesting that he somehow got access to some of the titles of the home and muddied them up and was able to go out and do that. So I just thought it was an interesting story leading into what we're talking about. You know, one of the things I think will be interesting, Deborah, is really talk about, you know, maybe get some education a little bit. We've shared a number of stories and cases and a lot of the great things you guys are doing. I thought it'd be great maybe to talk about a few terms, and so that when these consumers are starting to maybe in the early phase before they contact them, and you maybe during, to understand some of the terms that, you know, lenders talk to the consumer once they're in that stage of default or foreclosure.
Sure, let's go through the process. Well, the first thing they typically will get is kind of scare tactic notices that look like they're in foreclosure, but they're not. They're called acceleration letters. And so, you know, the bank will start sending them acceleration letters that they're going to move forward to foreclose and to call them, and they give them options, you know, to do different things like a deed in lieu or cash for keys or try for a modification. And then... After that, they get what's called a default notice that says officially that you're in default, tells them the amount, you know, that they're in the arrears and the date that they went into default and that they're going to continue to foreclosure. They will get those posted on their house. So that when you get the notice on your house, you know, it's really, really important that you realize that you have to take action because they are coming to take it. And in the last, you know, year, they're moving very quickly on foreclosures, where before people could coast a long, long time and they weren't on the bank's radar. So they get that default notice, and then the next step is they're going to get what's called a trustee sale date. And once that trustee sale date happens, it's super important that they realize they only have a 20-day window to utilize the state mediation program. Now, the state mediation program is designed to have the lender and the borrower be together at the same place to make a decision to modify. And that is actually the plan. That doesn't typically happen, but we at Magnum use it as a tool, and we represent you. You have to have an attorney or a HUD-approved counselor that can represent you, so you certainly can try to do it on your own. And I know people that have, not very many people are very successful at it on their own without an attorney. So then that part happens, and you either make a deal or you don't make a deal. And after the mediation, they have 7 days to do a certification that says mediation's closed. So once mediation's closed, they therefore will proceed to foreclose on you and take your house, and they will take it to what's called an auction, and people bid on it, and then you have, you know, a certain period of time to be out of the house, depending if they do a lawful detainer or not. So that's kind of the process, you know, and it moves faster than you think. So at Magnum, we utilize the mediation and a lawsuit that we'll draft up at the same time that forces them to know that if you don't work something out with us, we're going to go ahead and sue you and continue with the lawsuit. So it puts more pressure on them knowing that we're going to use the fraud and all different things that we find in a file. So that's kind of the process. If you're in default, that's the chain of events.
Okay. And then what's the difference? One of the terms that gets thrown out a lot is judicial and non-judicial foreclosure.
So we in Washington are a non-judicial foreclosure state, where other foreclosures are judicial, and the rules are different between the two. And Craig should actually address this. Is Craig on the line?
I didn't see him come up yet, so I'll...
Okay. So I know that in a judicial, I kind of know the parameters, that you actually have, I believe, a 12-month period to redeem your house. Like, they'll take it immediately. And from what I'm understanding, it's a lot easier to take your home in a judicial foreclosure than a non-judicial. So I really don't want to address that because I'm not an attorney.
Right. And then how critical is the trustee in all of this, right? I mean, basically they just step in for the bank and they're doing most of it on behalf of the bank. Is that kind of a...
Yes, but let me kind of back up of why fraud has become so predominant. The lender has to appoint somebody to foreclose on you. So they'll appoint somebody like Northwest Trustee or Recon Trust or Quality Loan Assurance or Cal Reconveyance. Those are kind of the ones that the banks have been using. So what happens is on your deed of trust, let's say you do have a MERS deed of trust, MERS has to appoint and assign to someone, okay? So they do a corporate assignment first, which is usually fraudulent signatures, and then the lender has to do an appointment of trustee. And that's where these trustees come in, and they're supposed to act on behalf of the lender and also the borrower to do a fair and fiduciary responsibility to both parties, but they've favored the lender. And the thing is that these lenders own these trustee companies, and people don't know that. So like Bishop, White & Marshall, who's a big attorney firm, they own Northwest Trustee. So they'll be foreclosing on you as the attorney and also the trustee. So it's they're all connected.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is
they're all connected.
Yeah.
It's a big fight.
Okay.
So, you know, that's what's so good about you bringing this up is that people understand this, is that a lot of these lenders appointed trustees own the companies that are going to foreclose on you. So,
yeah, and again, it makes your point that you really want some legal representation because if you're talking to the same person that has a vested interest in it, they're not going to help you, even though it may seem like that.
Yeah, it just seems over and over again in the last couple of years we've been doing this that very, very, very few people can succeed to stop a trustee sale or to get a modification. The banks just don't care about you, and that's
right.
What you need to realize. And so, unfortunately, they're bigger and have more attorneys, and you need an attorney to defend you and to fight for your legal homeowner rights that you may not know about. And that's what's so important. If you're not willing to do the fight, then no big deal. Walk away and be foreclosed on, or at least try to do a cash and keys for yourself, right? In this market, people are saying that it's I might as well go rent. I can get a better house renting. I might as well let my house foreclose. Well, market values are coming up. I'd be rethinking that. You want to hang on to your real estate because it's going to be really hard for you to buy real estate again, right, with prices rising and the rates rising and all that stuff. So you don't want to be evicted if you don't have to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now let's talk about this. What's the difference here in the, you know, without making it, since we didn't get Craig on cross over to the legalese of it, but the deed in lieu of foreclosure versus a short sale, are those closely related or are they how different of those?
Well, the deed in lieu puts what you owe to the back of the loan and then you have a balloon payment. So it's kind of a temporary mod and then you have a balloon payment. So you're not going to lose the home. And then, modification is just a modification. But I really wish Craig was on because I really like to have him address the expert legal stuff. But I do have
right.
some breaking news I want to tell you about. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
So two breaking news that have happened since our last show, and they're really a big deal. There's a gal, and I think we talked about her before, Lynn Zimoniak, who is a gal in Florida that got foreclosed upon her million-dollar condo, and she's the one that discovered the robo-signer, Linda Green, that was on 60 Minutes and brought all this to light. She was the whistleblower, is what it was called, for the United States government. They got $96 million for exposing the robo-signers, and she got a percentage, and she got $18 million. Well, that was in March 2012. Now, since then, the case has been sealed all this time. So we have, of course, wanted to get into the case and into the dockets and read it and see what did they put in that lawsuit that made them win. Well, just about 2 weeks ago, the suit is unsealed. So we've been in it, and we've been looking at it. And come to find out, it's exactly what we at Magnum Law Group have been doing all along, on the fraudulent robo-signing, on the securitization of the ownership of your note, and all the things we've talked about on every single show. The jargon is a little bit different, and there were some interesting things to look at, but that is a really big case and precedent for people going forward that are suing their lender. It can now be put into the suit and be referenced. There's a couple other cases that have also been opened up that we found in the last couple months that are crucial to what we're doing. So the more cases that you can name against, in your favor to prove your point, obviously the judges have to look at. So that was one of the breaking news, but here's a big one. Craig and I have been talking about the tiling issue, right? If you have fraud on your, if you have a robo-signed signature from MERS or one of the banks, you actually have a clouded title. So, you know, Craig's been saying all along, but how do you prove it? If it's on there, how do you prove that it harmed you or that it kept something, you know, from going your way or whatnot? Guess what? They are now, when you go to buy a house and your title, your buyer's title, it now lists food, the whole chain, where it never did before. It never put on corporate assignments and the robo-signed signatures in gigged exhibits. It never put the appointments of trustees, but they are now on all titles. And we've got the examples, and we read through them, and the gist of it basically is the title company is taking themselves off the hook to be sued, and it's, you know, basically saying, here it is, this is what's on your title, do with it what you want, lenders see if you want to finance it, but they take themselves off the hook by saying they're not really sure who the beneficiary is of the note in legal jargon. It's freaking amazing.
Wow, this is explosive, Sarah. This just happened.
And Craig and I have been waiting for this for 2 years. We knew it was coming. We knew it was going to affect people to refinance. We knew it was going to affect people to buy properties and sell properties. And it's now coming to light because the title companies don't want to be sued.
Right. So they're just going to disclose it.
Yeah, so in reference to one particular case we're working right now, it's actually a short sale that we're doing for a client. And on their title clearly states everything that I just said, right? Well, we can't get clear title because the buyer can't get financing. And until that title is clear, we can't close that short sale.
Wow.
So, it's affecting everything.
Right, right. So this should give more people, more potential clients out there that are, you know, struggling. I mean, this becomes a huge tool to sort of work with.
It's more ammunition to use against your lender. But the thing is, let's say you're a borrower and you call them up and say, hey, I have this fraud in my title. You're talking to a $10, $12, $15 an hour person at the bank. They don't even know what you're talking about, right?
Right.
You have to go into a lawsuit to have an attorney, you know, do this for you. It's not something you can just call up and say, hey, and because those people don't even know what you're talking about.
Right. Wow. So, well, again, as we always say each show, you really want to get help. It's not a game you can win on your own. And I know a few people do try it and you get so far, but boy, this is that's an awesome tool to be working with someone that understands it like you guys. Because not everybody even knows that. Like I said, we're doing these terms and most people don't know. They certainly don't.
Right.
Know.
Well, and the thing about it is, if it's hard for an attorney to win, how hard will it be for you to win?
Absolutely.
You know, you have to ask yourself, how do you want to win? You know, because you can put all that effort out and all those millions of calls and sending all those documents. And as we talked about last show, you know, Bank of America in specific terms have told their people to deny those mods whether they qualify. And the other thing is, you know, those modifications, I don't know if people know out there, they are based on what's called a net present value. It's called an NPV, whether you get your mod or not. And in simple layman terms, what it means to you is this. If the bank makes more money for closing on you, you're not getting your mod. If they don't make as much money in keeping you in the house, whichever way is more profitable for them is their calculation of their net present value. And that's determining your modification, whether you qualify or you don't.
Wow. So
yeah.
Where is the government? So we have all these programs out here, but apparently they're, you know, the banks at the end of the day are still doing what they want to do. That's what it sounds like to me.
Bottom line, they're doing what they want to do for their greedy intentions, just like previous times. Nothing has changed, even though, and we've talked about this before, even though they agreed, they signed the Department of Justice consent when they did the big $25 million settlement, national settlement, they don't care, and we talked about it many times. Since then, we have lots of evidence that they broke that consent. Over and over again, we have new robo-signers. We used to say we wouldn't take cases past 2007 because we didn't think there was fraud. And then we discovered about a year ago, oh, there's fraud in 2009. We find it in 2013 all the way through. So don't think for 1 minute that your loan doesn't possibly have fraud because where we thought before was accurate, the fraud has continued all the way through 2013 till today.
Well, I think you brought up 2 points that really kind of makes this bittersweet because there's so many people early on who didn't get good legal advice, didn't get help, tried to do it on their own, and basically lost their homes. And we know, you know, thousands of people fall into that category. And we know there is a category, and I know we have listeners that tune in every week, that's in this latter category where they're still kind of in that battle, and they're still trying to figure out a way to hold on. And those are people we really want to reach, right? Because now with the new tools and weapons you've got, now there's maybe even a greater chance to be able to get something done for them.
Yes, and the thing about it is we're getting our system dialed in at Magnum. We have been closing just since our last show. We have settled many cases, about another 10 cases, and we have found a nice niche that working with the banks is working, and that is if you're in trustee sale day and we can get to intermediation with the lawsuit, that has been pretty effective. And even if you're not and you're past that date, some people are grandfathered in, and there's lots of rules to know. And, again, that's why you need an attorney. But for the people that have been foreclosed on in the last few years, you also need to call us. You may have grounds for us to sue to get you some kind of compensation back, and that's important to know. Wow. That just because you lost and walked away doesn't mean there's not maybe a chance to go back and get something else too.
Wow. Well, we have talked about that. That is important, right? People that.
So yeah, we do a lot of the illegal foreclosures, and we have found that 86%. That number seems to hold true. That 86% of the loans that we do our free audits on have fraud. So if that's holding true, it's going to hold true for the illegal foreclosures. So there's a very good chance that you have something against that. So if Lynn Simoniak with the government could get $18 million dollars for Linda Green's signature, and that case is now open, that's exactly what she sued for, was for illegal foreclosure. So, you know, our phone should be ringing off the hook, I would expect, tomorrow morning, because there's a lot of people out there that have lost their homes and walked away and got zero.
Absolutely. And if people know there's a chance, it's worth it if there's an opportunity like that. So, boy, you guys are just growing and growing with this. It's just amazing because every time there's something new, it's something fresh.
Right.
And I think it's important because I think our economy is not doing as well as we want to think it is, and more people are struggling than we want to admit.
Well, and we really strengthened our team. We really strengthened our team and lost some people, let some people go, brought on some new players, and people have really grown at Magnum to be a very efficient team. And so it's working really well.
That's awesome. So as we always do, to everyone, to make sure that everyone knows, the fundamental stuff, how to reach you and how to get connected.
Talk about our website. There's a lot of information on our website, and you can fill in what's called an intake form to tell us your story so we can see if we can help. And we do initial free consultation and audit on your situation. Our website is magnumlawgroup.com, so www.magnumlawgroup.com. And you can reach us by email there, too, as well, or you can call us at 425-454-4300, so 4300, really easy number. And I would encourage you, don't be afraid. Everybody seems to be embarrassed that they're behind or whatever, and don't forget the people that are current. You have fraud in your loan documents too. So it's not just the people in trouble going to trustee sale. And our second mortgages, we've done so well on, just continue to close more and more cases of our second mortgages and get people equity back and get those down to pennies on the dollar. So for people out there that maybe they're current and they have $80,000 negative equity and a $50,000 second they need to get rid of, right? Let's get you closer to being equitable. So give us a call.
Absolutely. And like I said, we want to encourage you. Remember, these shows are on podcast. You can just send the whole show to someone you think. You don't even have to say it. Just tell them to listen to the show and do the rest. So we want to make sure we get as many people helped and into the process. And more importantly, get the right legal support to win the battle. So, Deborah, thank you so much. As always.
Can I just ask one favor for all you listening today? We're on Facebook as well, Magnum Law Group on Facebook. So if you go there and like us and help us build our awareness to let people know that there actually is help. Because one of the biggest things I find is that people don't know that there's help in their local area here.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well then, yeah, go to Facebook and look up Magnum Law Group, hit like, and post up. That's right.
And spread the word. Thanks so much for having us again, Lewis.
Hey, thank you, Deborah, and we'll see you next month. And I can't wait to hear what's next. Never a dull moment having you guys on.
Take
so I thank Deborah with Magnum Law Group, and enjoy the rest of your holiday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We're going to continue our discussion on this Labor Day, and we're going to be talking about how to improve your personal economy. This is Lewis Howard. You're listening to The House.
The new Home Trends team has earned a reputation as the people who know what's going on in the marketplace. New Home Trends track sales, floor plans, selling, prices, lot sales, and so much more. New Home Trends has an extensive database and is growing daily. New Home Trends is the pulse of the new home industry. Contact them at 425-742-8040 or go to newhometrends.com.
Are you considering buying or refinancing your home? Let the knowledgeable professionals at Guild Mortgage Company guide you through the process. Guild Mortgage Company has been closing loans and opening doors for over 50 years, helping borrowers purchase homes with little or no money down. Now may be a great time to buy. Home prices and rates are still at record lows. It's your time to take advantage of this opportunity.
Hi, I'm Mayumi, co-founder of Make It a Great Date, personalized matchmaking inspired by true love. Come join our launch party Wednesday, February 27th at Sweet Lounge in Bellevue. Enjoy food, music, giveaways, and of course, mingling. Register today at www.makeitagreatdate.com. That's makeitagreatdate.com. It's going to be a great party, and we hope to see you there.
Reality, right, of living in this economy and bouncing back. And, you know, one of the things she said I think is really important is that your home is an asset. No matter what the state of it is, it's still an asset. If you're in control of that asset, you want to do whatever you can to fight to hold on to that asset. So, all right, so in the middle of that, I'm a believer in building things, in structure, and foundations, and things of that nature. And so in the middle of this, we want to really talk about how to improve your personal economy. Your life is your personal economy. And so you gotta think in such a way that you have the opportunity to succeed and achieve whatever level of, you know, goals that you've set. And your personal economy, it allows you to do that, whether it's retirement, whether it's being able to, you know, spend time with more kids, maybe want to make more kids, I don't know, getting married, starting a business, getting an education. All those things have to do with your personal economy. So you've really got to think about that. You know, the old economy is gone, right? We're living in a new economy, whether you realize it or not. And what I mean by that is that companies don't keep employees on for 20 years or more. Some companies can't stay in business for 20 years, right? So it used to be, you know, when many of us were younger, that if you worked for a company, you started a company, you worked for a company, you retired from that company. And that's just not the case anymore. And then secondly, many companies are getting resources in the international markets, right? From labor to cheaper materials to manufacturing aspect of it. So, you know, it's not always born, raised, and grown in America. And so one of the things we have to understand is our economy is changing. So that means you got to change, right? College degrees are not what they used to be. They're important, don't get me wrong, but they're not what they used to be. They don't guarantee the level of success that they used to, simply because companies are looking for cheaper labor, a cheaper way to do their business, and so they're looking to, you know, do things, you know, that's why software technology is so important, because it allows companies to do things cheaper that they would have to pay somebody to do years prior. So it's, you know, it's good news because it allows us to enjoy things, you know. Many of you are listening to me right now on a tool, you know, the computer, the internet, or podcast, or maybe on iTunes. You know, you're able to get a lot of things on the smartphone and notepad, and all of that is a result of technology. So think of new technology. So think of old economy and old technology as a typewriter, right? We don't use very many typewriters anymore, right? But there's somebody still making typewriters, right? But the new economy, we use notepads, laptops, and desktops, and things like that. We wire and email and do those kinds of things. So that impacts the economy. So anyway, you want to be thinking. I always say is how to improve your personal economy is number one is how you think. How do you see your finance? And you need to see your finances like a business sees its finances. You have profit, income, losses, and expenses. That's what a business looks at, among other things, you know, taxes and all the different other stuff. But they're looking at profit, your income. So even if you're an employee and you have a job, that's your income, right? And then you have on top of that your expenses, and then you have things that are losses. So you have to be thinking that you are yourself, Inc. I always say that. Think of yourself as, you know, especially people out there that are independent contractors, if you're in sales business or you're contracted to a company, you are like a business, and you have to think of it. That's the first way to change the way you see your personal economy, and it's the first way to improve it, how you think, right? We know that a business, if it has too many losses, goes out of business, right? So the same thing with you. If you go too long without income, you're going to end up in bankruptcy, right? So you have to be thinking that economy is kind of the oxygen, if you will, to keeping things going. Your planning, right? Number two is going to be that planning. How is your planning? And you need two types of plans, right? I've learned this because I've gone through an up-and-down personal economy over the last 4 years. And I've learned I've had to have a long-term plan, but I've also had to have a very short-term plan. I mean, right down to, you know, weeks at a time, 30 days at a time. What am I going to do this week? What am I going to do next week? And some businesses have to operate that. If your cash flow as a business is dependent on, you know, people coming into your business weekly or monthly, then that's where your plans have to evolve around. How much staff do I need? How much do I need? How much can I, you know, not have? And so you have to think about that in your own personal life. Is you have short-term plans, and you have to think about what do I need to cover in short-term. What bills, what payments are going to be prior to, what am I going to have to cover, what's going to come due. And then long-term, hey, I want to make $1 million. But that's long-term, and so that's going to take a little bit longer to grow that fruit than maybe just short-term. You know, one of my mentors taught me years ago, so sometimes you got to do what you don't want to do to get to where you want to be. And really those short-term plans that you set is really about helping to get to the long-term. Because if you don't win in the short-term, you're not going to get to the long-term. And that's part of the problem we have in our culture is we have a heated kind of generation. We don't want to wait. We want it now. We want to get the credit we deserve now. We want to have the big Bentley now. We want it now. And so you really have to get out of that mentality, especially if it's through what's going on in the economy. Because it's taking longer and it's costing more for people to get back to where they even think they used to be. So creating the short-term and long-term plans. So what does that look like for you? You know, it's really going to be depending on your situation and really what's pressing you, what's stressing you, and what do you want to get off your plate. right? And in line with that, phrase number three is you got to look for new or additional revenue income sources, right? So one of the things that a business will try to do, you take a restaurant, they'll add new menu items. Well, those are new revenue streams, right? They've got best-selling items, they keep those, and maybe they try to add a few more items so that maybe more people will come in because they have, I don't know, more seafood. Or, you know, what's big in our area is vegan. And so some people add more vegan items to their menu to keep attracting customers that are, you know, vegan-based eating, right? So you got to look for ways. Maybe you got to go get a part-time job. Maybe you got to try network marketing. Maybe you got to start a business on the side. Whatever it is, if your current economy is not working, you need to find ways to increase. First thing we think about is, well, what do I cut off, right? And I see a lot of people do that. Well, I cut my cable off, or I cut off this. That's not necessarily going to improve your comp. It may help your cash flow. It may help your losses. It's not going to improve your economy. Income, revenue, improve. Not squeezing things, creating things is what improves your economy. So you got to be thinking about that. First thing we're thinking about is start cutting everything off, but that's not really the answer. The answer is really, where can I find some new additional income or revenue streams? Look at successful companies. They all have multiple products, multiple services. Some have multiple businesses that they service and sell to the consumer, and all of those count as revenue streams. Right? Consider education. You know, and that's not just formal education, but you know, if you want to be in technology, you may need to go take some technology classes, take some computer classes. I know people that are just not even efficient on operating computers and emailing. Okay? You can't be in the 21st century and not be good at that, right? So you really need to be thinking about how to maximize the tools that you have, and that may require you getting some additional education. If you don't understand money, then take money classes, right? You can educate yourself up, and then you'll find that you may have some gifts and be the triggers as a result of those education. Oh, wow, I didn't know I liked that. I might could do this. I could do that. You got to be thinking ways sort of accelerate that learning curve so that you can help boost the economy. Because why? Knowledge is power, right? What you don't know will hurt you. So as you increase in knowledge, I mean, one of the things I've been very good at over the last two decades of being in the housing and real estate industry is constantly looking for ways to educate and increase my knowledge base, because it increases my value, increases my ability to create, my ability to think, my ability to handle pressure, ability to handle the short term while keeping my eye on the long term. And that's just a result of learning. And so if you're used to just making widgets and that's all you do, and the market's moving on to other things, you got to figure out how to connect with that. A lot of small towns suffer when companies move out, because that town was dependent on that company for the technology that it had at the time, and of course it's moved on. So number five is make smart buys. Okay? This is what I tell people. Don't buy something for what it costs. Buy something for what it will do for you and your growth. Right? So one of the things investing, I just talked about it, things that will improve your personal economy, education, invest in books, invest in software that will help you. And don't worry about what it costs. Be concerned about what it will do for you. Will it help me? Will it help me? You know, relationships. I mean, you invest in relationships. Meet new people. What will that do? Maybe it is out of my comfort zone. You know, when I sit down and talk with, you know, financial and money managers, a little bit out of my comfort zone, because those guys have, you know, more education and more degree. But I also know if I can get to know them and I can build a relationship with them, out of this relationship become some amazing opportunities. For growth and change. So think about when you're going to buy something, right? And I'm talking to women out here, you know, as much as guys, but, you know, you go out and buy those nice shoes, go out and buy all those purses, and it's great to have that, but is it hurting your economy or is it helping the economy? Not if you go out and buy the nice car, you know, to attract the girls, is that helping your economy or is it hurting your economy? Let's use the side of that. Get help. All right, number six is get help. Get financial counseling to help you develop and execute a plan. There are companies out there, there are individuals out there that specialize in financial planning. And I think one of the hardest things for us as human beings, especially as Americans, is to ask for help. We just don't want to look weak. You know, a friend of mine was just telling me a story just yesterday. A gentleman that came into the ER where she's working, and he had burned himself. He was cooking, and apparently got, you know, grease all over him, and then burned himself, and came into the ER. And one of the things that the ER staff did was they scolded him because he didn't call 911. Because if he had called 911 and asked for help, then they would have taken him straight to the ICU Express. Instead, he had to go in one hospital, and then they had to let him sit there, which, you know, he was in pain, and then be transported to another hospital because they didn't have the resources to help him there. Had he called 911, he would have been taken straight there. So sometimes when you delay asking for help, it's more costly. Okay? You need to ask for help sooner than later. Don't wait till you get to the end of your rope. You know, do it at the top of the rope. Don't wait till last minute and everything's on the line. So you have to balance the timing, you know. And I know there's a level of independence we all like to operate at. So, you know, try it for a while, but then the way you're dealing with, get help. Okay? That would be my, that's one of the biggest things. How you think and being able to ask for help. I'm never afraid to ask for help. Whenever I feel like my back's against the wall or I'm looking to do something, I'm quickly on the phone with the people that I trust. So we're talking about today ways to improve your account. We've got a few minutes left. So get help, financial counseling, you can look that up. Number seven is interesting, to improve your personal economy. All my shoppers will like this. Reward yourself, right? If you set a goal and you achieve a goal, reward yourself. Don't just reward yourself for the sake of rewarding yourself because I deserve it and I earned it, you know, and so forth. But reward yourself. Set a goal. You had a strong year and you've been disciplined with working out or you've been disciplined with your money and you've been disciplined and you've accomplished certain things. Maybe you want to pay for a trip and you get rewarded for that. Your mind responds to that. It'll work harder to get to that point. It's amazing how the mind works. So all work and no play gets boring. So you have to, I'm not talking about, you know, conspicuous consumption rewarding like those on with some people. But reward something. You want that drip. You want this. You want this car. You can afford to get the boat. But reward yourself doing that. Find something you're passionate about doing. One of the ways to improve personal economy is find something that you are passionate about and that you can do, that you enjoy doing. I'm telling you, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the business that I have, and I could do it all day, right? One thing that slows us down is when we're doing things we don't like, and we're making money at it, but we don't like it. So you have to do things that you can absolutely be passionate about doing. Final thought is always leave room for growth and expansion, because there's always something up ahead that you didn't expect to see, and if you didn't plan for it, plan to make $5, leave room to make $20. Because you never know what opportunities are. And you don't want to miss those opportunities because you thought too small. So always think big. There's no fault that comes from thinking big, but there's plenty of fault and short consequences of thinking big too small. So those are just some ways to really, you know, think. But like this, how you think, really, and who you're around, getting help, and making sure you're passionate about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and stay committed to that. So again, we'll continue to visit those, get a couple experts on that can talk more intelligently than I can about it. But, you know, someone that's been, you know, worked for a company for 10 years as an executive, I've been unemployed, I have been self-employed, independent contractor, I've had, you know, different income methods. And all of them require you to have some sort of plan, and it really does impact how you think and how you see yourself in the world. So there you go, and I want you to enjoy the rest of this fine holiday, and it's been great to be on the air with you, of course, as always. And don't forget, you can get every week. We're on every Monday, either 2 or 6, depending on the time. But the main part, you can get this show, and you can download it and send it and tell a friend and tell a friend. And part of their family.